Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
This is a Patriots Unfiltered emergency podcast.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Patriots Unfiltered!
All right, folks, it's official. We're here with an emergency podcast. We got Deuce battling a little cold. We got Tamara, Evan, Paul, and Paul, when was the last time we did an emergency podcast? I feel like it was like COVID. Like, it's been a long time.
Like Cam Newton. I don't know. I thought the emergency was you being under the weather.
That was an emergency, but I'm all right.
Thoughts
I'm here.
And prayers.
You guys are here. And, of course, we're here to talk about Jerod Mayo, who was announced just recently by the Patriots officially as going to be the 15th head coach of the Patriots. So big news, and I guess the biggest part of it is just that there was a succession plan built in. And, you know, it's obviously we're going to get into all of that, and please give us a call, 855-PATS-500. Shoot us an email, webradio at patriots.com with your questions. But, guys, for me, it just – I think the interesting thing was – there's been reports coming out talking that this was put in place and that maybe there was some tension with Bill and Jerod. I mean, I guess in retrospect it makes it sound like Bill Belichick was a little bit of a lame duck this year. Maybe it wasn't supposed to be this year, but just off the top, what are your thoughts? I guess I'll jump with you, Paul. You've been here the longest. You've seen, this is your, third head coach.
I love
now?
How he likes to remind you how old you are whenever he has a chance.
Yeah. I think that seemed to be where everything was headed. I'm not overly surprised that there was actually a clause in the contract, according to NFL Network, that sort of set this all up as an official succession plan. And if you think back to some of the things that were said in the offseason, I think Robert Kraft actually used the term heir apparent at one of his, I want to say the owner's meetings in Arizona, yep. But one of his offseason debriefings. So, yeah, I think that this is the plan, maybe a little bit sooner, as you said, Mike, than they wanted to. But this is the direction that the Patriots were headed as far back as last year at this time.
I already published on patriots.com, so you can read the actual quotes, but I think the biggest thing for me is to stress that this is not simply Bill 2.0. like, Jerod Mayo is a very, very different type of coach than Bill. He was described to me by multiple players as a player's coach several times, like, and not prompted or anything like that by other people. This is somebody that obviously played following that model that's been successful around the league, and I would say is a total opposite personality-wise of what they had with Bill Belichick. So in some ways, I am, and we'll talk about it, like, the concerns are legitimate about, I think, kind of like what Paul has brought up a lot, is this going to change how they philosophically try to win football games? And I think that's the biggest question that Jerod's going to have to answer is, are you trying to win 3-0, or are you willing to have an offense that is able to win games? But in terms of him as a coach and him as a person, a much, much different personality than what the Patriots had with Bill Belichick. If you look at Bill Belichick as like a disciplinarian type of head coach, I would look at Jerod Mayo as a player's coach. So they've completely changed gears in terms of that style.
Yeah. What do you think, Tamara?
I personally love it. I think that it's going to bring like a fresh look to the team personally. And for me, being from his hometown and just seeing my entire like city like light up with this news, I'm excited to actually go home for my mom's birthday so I can get the newspaper and see what it says, because I'm sure he's going to be on the front. But just seeing the players' excitement today of the news, just how excited they were all over social media, like you even have free agents that are allegedly excited to come back because of that news. I think that says a lot about who he is as a person, like Evan said. And I think just through numerous press conferences with him and with guys talking about him, I think they are fully support him. And I think that if they set the table appropriately for Jerod Mayo, he can have a great, hopeful first year.
Yeah, I think that's the question now is who sticks around from the staff. You know, is there a GM hired? Do they begin interviews? I know Ian Rappaport put out, you know, a list of, you know, potential GM mm-hmm. candidates. Adam Peters, I think, just signed with the Commanders. He was one. And now it's really just, you know, I mean, for me, I love Jerod Mayo. We have a little bit of a relationship with him. I'm not blown away right now. Like, I kind of want to see what happens on the offensive side of the ball. To your point, I mean, even more than, like, what's his philosophy, what kind of guys is he going to surround them with? And, I mean, I guess the positive for me is that the defense is going to kind of stay intact, the way that they run the defense. But I have real questions still about, is it? What are they going to do with the GM position, and how are they going to staff the offensive team? Are they going to keep it kind of the same? Are they going to allow Billy O another year to maybe hire some different staff? At this point, I'm just wondering how much are they going to run it back with what they've kind of had. And I think, Paul, you made the point early in this process. If you're just getting rid of Bill and you're bringing everybody else back, isn't that you're just kind of taking
just
out the key
Bill.
Pays?
Yeah.
Just keep Bill. I come from a place of excitement that the defense stays intact. I like Jerod Mayo. We all have a relationship established with him. But is this going to make the Patriots better and be able to get back to a level? I still feel kind of like I don't know.
I personally do not feel like it's going to be ran back at all. Like, I feel like just from listening to Robert Kraft yesterday and talking about how he, even from like the fans to even the way he feels about losing, the way they've been playing the last 3 years, like, not acceptable. So I think just to change the person who's in charge but keep everything the same, I think that would be really stupid, and I don't see Mr. Kraft as a stupid guy, and so I fully see the whole offensive side being completely blown out and made new.
Yeah.
I also just think, you know, with the Bill thing and, you know, yesterday talking to people and stuff like that, like, the timelines didn't match up with Bill Belichick anymore. You know, this is a 71 going on a 72-year-old man, and the Patriots are going into a full-scale rebuild, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They're going to have a young quarterback, a new quarterback, most likely. They're going to have a lot of different personnel on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that for Bill, he was looking for probably 2-3 years, maybe, go after Shula, compete in the short term. And I think for the Crafts and for the Patriots, they were looking at it as more of, well, we're trying to build a sustained winner. I think in 21, they threw a lot of money at the problem. They drafted a quarterback in the first round, and they went for the instant gratification, and it worked to an extent. But then obviously we saw what's happened since. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, why not just keep Bill? I think the big reason is that they are looking at this as more of a long-term play, where we're looking at Mayo being here through an entire rebuild, but not like in 21, like an actual rebuild. And
right.
It could be a couple of years until the Patriots are truly championship caliber. And if you're Bill Belichick, you build the Patriots back up. Let's say he hits and everything goes all sunshines and rainbows in the off season. You hit on a quarterback. Realistically, you're probably not a championship caliber team until Bill's 74, 75 years old. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, then what? Now he's going to leave and everything. So, or retire at that point. So I think that that's a big reason why. And in terms of the staff, I think the one person that could stay from the front office is Elliot Wolf. I think there's a really good chance that he's the next general manager of the Patriots. And I know a lot of people are going to sit there and say, well, that's not change. But I think Elliot Wolf is somebody that has been outside the organization. This is not somebody that grew up in Bill Belichick's shadow and did everything, you know, the Belichick way for the last 20 years, like a Mac Rowe or something like that. He has had other jobs, other stints in the league before he came here. And I think he was doing a lot of the, especially on the pro personnel side of things, a lot of the general manager type stuff over the last couple of years anyways, since Dave Ziegler left.
My question would just be, though, if it is Elliot Wolf, is, you know, we'll get a look at how much is this like Bill overriding his scouting department. And, you know, that was part of the Breer story yesterday, where he kind of brought up A.J. Brown and Deebo Samuel being a little bit too loosey-goosey on their trip for Bill's liking. They ended up with N'Keal Harry. You know, we've talked about it in the show recently. You don't know exactly how you divide it all up of, you know, was Elliot Wolf coming up with great picks from the last couple drafts and he was overridden by Bill? Or are these Elliot Wolf's guys already that we've been seeing the last couple
of
years?
I do always love those. And this is probably better for our regular weekly shows on PU. But I do love those stories about you know, the sources that tell you about, you know, this is the guy we wanted, but this is the guy that Bill did it, you know, always after the fact. It's never about the, you know, the anonymous scout who tells you, you know, the guy I really wanted was N'Keal Harry. But, you know, unfortunately, the Patriots took him instead. I never got to pick him. You know, it's always, oh, yeah, you know, Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown, those are the guys. You know, I just find it interesting. They were too loosey-goosey in their visit, but yet Rob Gronkowski famously fell asleep during
I thought the same exact thing.
And they drafted him. So, like I said, I think there's a lot of truth to those stories. I'm not telling you that I don't believe the story. I just think sometimes you have to try to identify where the quotes are coming from and the angles that they're coming from. The bottom line is the Burt Breer story. I don't know if you guys read Mike Reese's piece about – Reese's piece? Did you see what I did there?
Ooh.
About the you know, the whole dysfunction. Dysfunction is the word.
Yep.
And to me, that's why I think, Ev, you said it kind of set up like a lame duck year for Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, is that Mike? Yeah. Is that you? Sorry.
Yeah.
I think Mike's piece sort of indicated that, you know, that this was a year early. I think that they probably wanted to make this transition after the 24 season, not before, but
that's
you go 4-13 and it gets accelerated.
Yeah, 4-13 plus like the locker room, and as much as, you know, everyone tries to say like, oh, we're in it together, we're fighting for each other, all this stuff, it's like you saw the way the locker room was, and it was truly falling apart. Look at the quarterback room, but between what happened with Mac and Zappe, it's like you really could not let that happen for another year with a brand new quarterback, with a weird quarterback room where everyone's kind of just preparing by themselves, even though they're telling us at the podium otherwise. They're just all the reports, I feel like, all season long have just pointed that it was time to end things.
Yeah, to me now, I like Gerard, I feel like, has a lot of things going for him that are positive. I think the players really like him. I think that he's got a good football mind. I think that the defensive side of the ball shows innovation, shows, you know, being modernized, things like that by Gerard Mayo. It's really now a question of who is around Gerard Mayo. You know, what do they surround him with? Who's the general manager? Who's the offensive coordinator? I think the offensive coordinator hire is absolutely massive, because not only is that not his side of the ball, but it's also a lot of responsibility that he's going to be taking on that he hasn't taken on before. So to have, you know, if it's not Bill O'Brien, but have somebody maybe with head coaching experience as an offensive coordinator or a real coordinator experience for a long period of time that can basically just run that side of the ball in year one. Because I think if you're asking Gerard Mayo to be Bill Belichick, who has his hands in everything and is all over the place, then it's unrealistic for such a young coach. So I look back at some of the recent models, you know, like Sean McVay, for instance, early on with the Rams when the Patriots played the Super Bowl against the Rams in 19-18 season. Wade Phillips was his defensive coordinator. You couldn't have a more experienced defensive coordinator than Wade Phillips. So they had the youngest coach in the history of the NFL with one of the oldest defensive coordinators in the NFL.
In Miami right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
With McDaniel and Fangio.
And Fangio, right. And so you pair that guy with somebody that has the ability to just be the head coach of his side of the ball, and you don't have to put all that stress on Mayo's shoulders. It would be interesting to see, because that Bill O'Brien does fit that resume, right? You know, former head coach, you know, been an offensive coordinator a million times. So maybe it is him. If it's not, I'm going to be fascinated to see who Gerard picks, because it's a big responsibility to fix that side of the ball.
Josh also does fit that in a way. But
it's Josh.
McDaniels.
Oh, he's going with Bill.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's done. We got to buy Evan some tight pants. Make him the next
one. Oh, yeah. I definitely have that experience.
Young
guy
with the tight pants.
That's what they need. But you look at offensive coordinator, you look at wide receivers coach, you look at offensive line coach. I think those three spots are definitely spots that could have different coaches here next year under Gerard. And that's going to be tough for Gerard with Troy Brown. I mean, like, that's a guy.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
You know, I don't think they overlap playing, right? I think Troy Brown was already retired at that point. But maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. But that's a position that we've all had in our crosshairs in terms of development, on-field execution, things like that. And there's been a lot of reporting about the wide receiver room and Troy Brown and Ross Douglas not exactly getting the job done. So,
I really hope that whoever the OC is gets to hire whoever they want, so that, you know, they have a staff working for them that they trust, versus like the articles that came out about Bill O'Brien not being able to hire the staff he wanted to, and therefore having huge unit meetings versus more individual meetings.
Yeah, I think, I mean, now the question is who's staying, who's going. I mean, we assume that the Steve and Brian probably would go with Bill. I would kind of guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, and Evan has been talking about this, you know, the last couple of weeks, and I agree, because we all see the relationship between Gerard Mayo and Steve Belichick seems to be pretty solid. So I don't completely dismiss it. I know everybody else, you know, it's a non-starter. Those guys have to go. They're going to go with their father. That's probably what's going to happen, but I don't dismiss it as a possibility.
Yeah. I would also look at Steve and say, like, if he is on the mind that he wants to be a head coach someday, then calling plays here with Gerard and doing it without his father is probably a better way to map out a resume to potentially be a head coach down the line. Like, you know, that's like Kyle Shanahan, you know, didn't coach for his father until Washington. and was able to, you know, make his own way in the world type of thing. So I wonder if that would be a factor. And then DeMarcus Covington's obviously a name that we're going to hear a lot that people are going to want to retain.
We got a couple calls, bunch of emails coming in. Before we get to those, though, just one more question I have for you guys, and that's, you know, probably the biggest thing about Jerod Mayo is just that he's basically been an inside linebackers coach, if you want to go by what the title is. We know he's more than that. But just generally, what are your thoughts on how big of a job this is for Jerod Mayo, given his experience? I know he, you know, spent a year or two in, you know, working like in investments, like
Optum.
You know, I don't know, like people trumpet that, like, well, corporate. He can do anything. He
he's a leader.
You're in corporate.
He's a leader.
He can do it all. But how realistic and how concerning is that of, you know, Jerod Mayo now having to basically reestablish the program? I'm sure he'll take some of Bill Belichick's stuff. I'm sure he'll not take some of his stuff, but
that's
it's
ideally,
organizing the whole thing.
Yeah, ideally, that's what you get. You'd get him taking some of the things from Bill that, you know, sort of evergreen that are going to work no matter what, and integrating that with maybe a younger mindset. I know he had that quote about, you know, when he was going through it, it was what the coach said, and nowadays the players are a little bit more about the why and all that kind of thing. So if he could be a mesh of those two things, I think ideally that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, you know, modern Bill, right? Like a lot of people call him like Jerod Belichick or mini BB in his playing days. But like now I think it's more of a modern version. And when you talk to some of the players about it, you know, they were comparing him to a D'Amico Ryans, a Mike McDaniel, a Antonio Pierce in Vegas, the interim coach with the Raiders, like those guys that either played or younger or, you know, can relate more to the players nowadays. And I think the one name that I heard a lot with Jerod, it was D'Amico Ryans. And D'Amico Ryans and him have a very similar resume coming up to this point. Both of them went right into coaching pretty much after playing and didn't have a lot of experience when they got the job. D'Amico Ryans was with the Niners for 6 years before he took the job. Jerod's been here for 5. So very similar pass to this point, and you can see how well it's working in Houston right now. So
yeah, well, let's jump over to the phones. Thank you for people who are calling in here on Emergency Podcast Friday. We'll go first, Dylan down in Orlando. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, happy Friday, guys.
Thank you.
Happy Friday.
Two questions, and I'll preface by saying I think I'm a fan of the decision. I'm excited to see what happens. Admittedly, I'm kind of concerned that the Pats didn't really do any due diligence on any of the other candidates. I'm curious to know if you guys think that the Patriots kind of trapped themselves into this move contractually with Jerod Mayo's contract. Obviously, you think back to like a Josh McDaniels who was supposed to be the successor, and if Belichick had kind of kicked the can a little bit earlier, we may have seen him in this position. So I'm curious on your thoughts about that. And then I'm also curious to know if you think that, given that Jerod Mayo is a defensive player, defensive coach, kind of a prodigy of Belichick, if Patriots fans should temper their expectations on the offensive side of the ball.
Thanks, Dylan. Appreciate it. Let's jump in on that. I mean, I got to admit, I kind of sold myself on the idea of Mike Vrabel over the last week, and I was excited about it. And, you know, I'm not quite as excited about Jerod. I love Jerod, I mean, personally, but just in terms of the experience factor and, you know, what we know, it just feels like there's a lot of unknowns, which can be a good thing and a bad thing, Paul, which as you pointed out.
The second part about the offense, I think we just all talked about, remains to be seen. We'll see how the structure of that coaching staff winds up being and what to expect. I do think the contract, the way they set it up, did box them in a little bit. And I'm not saying that I think it's the wrong guy, the wrong choice. What I think, you could very well have landed on Jerod Mayo the same way. I think that you do yourself a disservice by not seeking more information. And I would have loved to have brought in, and I know I'm joking around all the time, I would have loved to have brought in one of these young, tight pant wearing offensive minds just to appease me. Yeah, just to hear
Ben
how
Johnson.
They talk about the game.
Yeah,
you know, what harm would it have been to have Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick in for an interview or Eric Bieniemy in for an interview? Just get around the league a different, you know, you don't have to have all of them, you know, pick one or two, you know, get a different perspective as to how the game is being played in other NFL places right now. And I think the fact that it was done so quickly, I think they were kind of boxed in by that contract.
Either they were boxed in by the contract or they wanted to show conviction. Because I think if you go ahead and you start interviewing people and then you settle back on Gerard, it kind of feels like you weren't really like sold on Gerard. And, you know? Yes.
And that was something that I think Florio wrote about earlier on Friday. And I don't get that. Like, you didn't want it hanging over the weekend with the playoff games and people speculating, are they going to go to Vrabel? Are they going to do this? I think if you have an idea, again, contractually, you kind of had to do this or break the contract in some way. I would have liked to have had them be a little bit more open-minded to it. I guess what I'm questioning is not the idea that Gerard Mayo is the coach, because I think we all think there's certainly a lot of potential with Gerard Mayo as the coach. My question is, going back to whenever they decided to do this, what made them so sure that that was the best way to do it? Why is that the best way to succeed Belichick without being able to really talk to anybody?
Yeah, no, it's totally fair point, and I think that's why the next hires are almost more interesting, because if they hire, they're not going to hire Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick to be offensive coordinator, because that's a lateral move for those guys. But if they hire one of your tight pant guys to come in and coordinate the offense, that's maybe on Miami staff, on San Francisco staff, something like that, then maybe they are trying to think a little. They are trying to bring something a little bit different on that side of the ball. So, who the coordinator hire is, what system he runs, like if it's just Josh McDaniels or Bill O'Brien, then I'm going to be a little bit concerned. Like, oh, so we really didn't learn anything for the last 4 years.
Right. Let's go way outside the box. Wes Welker,
tighter pants. That's the tightest of pants, I think. Wes Welker rocks on
some baggy
island.
Pant guys. Let's.
no such thing.
I don't think those exist.
Here you got some MC Hammer pants.
Let's go down to Eldred in North Carolina. Hey, Eldred.
Hey, Tamara. Hey, fellas.
Hi.
Hey. This is your personal hello to Evan, Tamara only? What is that?
I'm going to miss something to you, Evan. You know, I was chomping about time to move on. When it happened yesterday, I felt a little bad. I ain't going to lie to you.
I did too, Eldred. I did too.
Felt a little bad. But I'm with everybody else. I'm with you too, man. I wish, like, the devil did some more offensive homework instead of another defensive guy.
Yeah, and I don't mind the choice. I just would have liked to have had more information.
Yeah,
me too. I mean, to me, it seemed like they was, like y'all said, boxed into the contract. Well, I'd have bought the contract. If Ben Johnson or Stovic or somebody else was better, give you a better revelation with the offense, because that's mainly what we heard that. I don't care. For the next couple of years, I'm figuring it's going to take us a minute to get back up there, but he got a long way to go, and I wish it was offensive mind of guy that did.
Yeah.
That's all I got, fellas.
All right.
Thanks, Eldred.
And I would agree with Eldred. I mean, like, I know this was like a thing on the show when we did the show yesterday. Like, I don't know a lot of people that think it's great. Oh, wow, he got fired. Isn't that great? Mm-hmm. I just don't know a lot of people. I know there are people. I'm not telling you there's none. I just don't know a lot of people that revel in other people's misery. And I guess there are certain people out there that do. I don't take a lot of glee in a guy who's been here for 24 years not being the coach anymore.
Yeah,
most of the response seemed more so like, we're so thankful for everything that he did, but we do also understand that it's time to move on.
I saw a lot of people that were like apoplectic that they got rid of Bill Belichick. I mean, that was that was the biggest between thank you, like, let's just appreciate what it was. That between that group, I didn't really see the it's about time. Like, that group didn't. I mean, of course.
How about the group that the media did this?
Right.
The media pushed it.
Right.
Yeah.
The media
blaming me and Evan.
Right. The media made them win four games.
We can get to that in a second. But I agree that I saw in look, Twitter and Paul's shows are not good sample sizes.
It's not real life. Right. I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, it's not a good sample size. But I did see a lot of people that were apoplectic. We got some emails about it. What the hell are they thinking? Yeah. But I not like to take any shots, but like, I think that those people, we are uniquely connected to the team where we see everything that's going on with the team on a day-to-day basis during the season, where some other people live your life, but like, you might just be checking in on Sundays at 1 o'clock and sit down and watch the game casually and aren't I don't think people looked at it that look at it that way don't look at it realistically of what the last 4 years of this football team have looked like. Like, they really have not been a competitive football team since Tom Brady walked out the door.
And you can give the records, and it's like 33-44 or something like that from the halfway point of that 2019 season on. That doesn't even tell you everything. What would be really alarming to me if I were Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft is the way the end of the season was sort of analyzed by the media. And I even yesterday heard a lot of people say, like, you know, like, and then the way that they came down the stretch with spirited wins over Pittsburgh and Denver and competitive games against Kansas City and Buffalo. And I'm thinking to myself,
the competitive game against Kansas City was great.
But I'm not even arguing whether or not you thought it was competitive. It wasn't. I'm not arguing whether or not it was competitive. Right. What I'm arguing is, have we really fallen to the point where we're now excited that we were able to only lose by 10 at home to Kansas City? Like, that was supposed to be like some sort of like momentum that the team was building. I like, that to me would be alarming. Like, we've gone in the span of 5 years to winning a Super Bowl to being really enthusiastic about only losing by 10 at home to Kansas City.
They're literally close. They finished in the last place in the conference. Like, they're the worst team in the AFC.
And
they played like it. Like, it wasn't
It's not like it was a fluke.
No. And I just, the other thing about the media pushing him out, and I agree with Eldred. Like, yesterday was a day of reflection.
Yeah, it was not a happy day.
It was not like, I wasn't walking around here like, you know, happy go lucky. Like, I got here yesterday and I felt like we were at a funeral. It was horrible. Yeah. At the same time, you have to, all we told you was what we were seeing and what was happening on the field. None of it was, just speaking for myself, none of it was out of spite. None of it was because he mumbles at press conferences or didn't answer my questions or whatever. None of it had anything to do with that. They were losing games at a record rate for this franchise and for this era of football. And that was what it was. They had flaws all over the roster for the most part. Like, defensively, their flaws weren't catastrophic. But offensively and special teams, they made more sloppy mistakes and more, you know, just bad football plays than I've ever seen them make. And, like, eventually you have to accept that. Like, and we just told you how it was, and now we ran them out of town. Yeah. Like, okay.
Let's jump back to the phones. We got Nick in Omaha. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Big fan of the show. You know, I'm a little timid. I'm a little nervous. I don't know how Paul feels about feelings. A little nervous to talk right now. But
just spit it out.
I was playing catch up this morning on the podcast, and I just wanted to float something out there that I thought was interesting. I know you guys take some interesting perspectives, so I thought you'd enjoy this. Maybe not, but something that Paul said, or sorry, not Paul. I'm sorry, Paul. Something that Robert said yesterday when he was talking about coaches and everything, and a reporter asked what went wrong last
similar
season
bank account, right?
And I think he took the words out of my mouth. It was just kind of like, I think we all were like, I don't know, just like, it's kind of hard to diagnose what went wrong. But I did have this thought, is it a little concerning to hear that from Robert at all, to someone who's plugged in and just kind of in the ins and outs, to hear him say, I don't know, like, I think it would be a little bit more satisfying to hear some sort of a diagnosis. But I'll take it off the air. But thanks
Nick, appreciate it. I mean, just for me, I just don't think he wanted to throw anybody under the bus. He was just being diplomatic. I mean, it's obvious you can – I mean, he's talked about the draft before. He's talked about how they've missed on the draft picks, which is an easy place to go. I agree that there's a lot of different things, but I just didn't think it was the time for him to be his draft sucked and, you know.
Well, what's the bigger thing?
Yeah, Mac.
We don't have the quarterback play, but he's not going to do that.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't.
Right.
That's the way I took it as well, and just sitting in the room, like, he paused for a while trying to think of what's the best way to answer this question. And then I think he just decided that pleading the fifth was the best way to answer the question.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's sort of what we got. But I also think that, you
totally
know,
with you guys.
We were talking about this on Catch 22 yesterday, which, by the way, that whole podcast is like
irrelevant,
not exactly evergreen.
I want Adam Peters.
Yeah. Right. You know, Mike Vrabel and Adam Peters. That's what's coming to town. We were talking about this yesterday though, just like the idea of having not just a general manager, but maybe like a VP of football operations or president of football operations that oversees the entire operation, because I don't know if Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft are technically qualified to like be making these high level football decisions on that, on in terms of personnel and all that kind of stuff. And I just look at some of the other organizations in town, and you know, the Bruins, for example, with Cam Neely, you know, they have Cam Neely up at the top, then they have Don Sweeney as the general manager, and then obviously Jim Montgomery is the coach. And Cam Neely's job is just to make sure that Don Sweeney and Jim Montgomery aren't steering off a ledge, you know, when they make some of these roster decisions and things like that. And I wonder if one of, you know, our great, well-decorated former players just, you know, would want to have a role like that in the organization. Maybe somebody that was just let go by the Titans, for example, to come in and be the face of the franchise from the top, you know, and run the team like that. I think when you watch Bill Belichick walk out the door, you're losing not just the coach, but you're also losing the football figure in the mind,
the head
of the snake. And like, you can't just replace that with Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf. Like, I just don't think that that's, you're losing too much brain power by doing it that way.
Do you think Vrabel would be open to not being the head coach though? And like not physically coaching?
I honestly have no idea. But I just look at it and it's more so in other sports, I would say, than in football. I think the best example in football is probably John Lynch with the 49ers.
I was thinking Devin McCourty.
Yeah, Devin McCourty would be great.
And the guy I was thinking of was John Lynch, you know, like a heady safety who's been around for a long time.
I just look at it locally, you know, guy like Brad Stevens makes the jump from coaching to the front office. And, like, I just think sometimes coaching gets tiring. Like, it's a long hours, long days. And I think one of the things that Vrabel got frustrated with in Tennessee was that he didn't have personnel control. So, you know, he had somebody continuously overruling him on the roster. So, but Devin would be great. I know he loves doing TV, though.
Right.
So
yeah, he's probably got a little easier.
Let's go out to Kansas. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I was wondering, I think with Robert Kraft, he had an idea, like, with Tom Brady, there was a clear successor in kind of Jimmy Garoppolo and stuff like that before that fell apart. I wonder if losing a great like Tom Brady, if he kind of would have thought a little bit more about a succession plan after Bill Belichick, and that could be a reason why he was so quick to announce kind of Gerard Mayo's Kansas City as coach.
Yeah.
I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
It's a good point.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's funny because in the immediate aftermath yesterday, I saw a couple of people like complain, there's no succession plan. I'm like, well, first do you know? I don't want to bring up names, but
like 20 minutes after they decided that Bill wasn't the coach anymore, they were complaining there was no was this my show?
When there was literally a succession plan written in writing.
This was an angry social media person who's just been on absolute tear the last couple days about how terribly this has gone.
Okay.
So probably not a good example. I mean, it's not exactly a straw man, but it's kind of just like a straw social media argument where like, I saw something come across my timeline and
it's pretty wispy.
It must represent, you know.
It's straw-like.
But, I mean, I think, like, it was easy for them, though, right? It was easy for them. Like, this is – I mean, they did make it easy for themselves, but I think everything you said, Paul, was apt. Like, you know, you don't really give yourself a chance to even kick the tires on Mike Vrabel when you might not even have known, like, that you would have had the opportunity to maybe consider someone like that.
I find the whole thing interesting to go back, and all signs pointed to the fact that Mayo was the guy, but to learn when it actually happens that it was contractual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is a little different, and I think that did kind of like tie their hands a little bit.
Yeah, he interviewed for at least two other jobs in the 2022 offseason, right, going into the Patricia Judge year offensively, just to put some
Denver.
Context. Denver, the Eagles. And he might have interviewed with the Raiders, so it might have been three. Might not have been Denver. Might have been Raiders. I'll get the exact. But he interviewed with multiple teams, and then was going to be another hot commodity in the 2023 cycle if he hadn't signed this extension with the Patriots.
Right.
So I think that they were just really fearful of that he was going to walk for another job, and so they'd said, "Well, why don't we just?" Everybody else thinks he's head coach material, so why don't we just make him the successor here? But I agree that with Paul that I would have rathered a more extensive search, and I hope for general manager that we don't find out that this is as simple as Elliot Wolf is getting a promotion, and just like we did today, it's like Monday, you know, it's and all this is over.
Yeah.
Like I really do hope that that side of things, they have a more extensive search.
I will say, like, hearing that it was in his contract made me think back to the article surfacing about, like, how he was rubbing people the wrong way. I was like, okay, now that makes sense because, you know, he knew no matter what, like, he was secure here.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have a reason to be moping around and upset and frustrated and angry. And
that's why the 2023 season was doomed to fail before it even started.
Yeah, and I think that was the best part of Reese's pieces. Which I thought was fantastic, by the way.
Well, you know that's what he used to call his blog, right?
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Oh, I used to read that. I would consume it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to, like, claim that as
that's
my own.
That's a good one. Did you come up with that?
Paul's Calls. That was mine.
Oh, really?
I thought that Mike obviously did a great job, as he usually does, in summing it up. And one of the things that he pointed out was just the awkwardness of that whole thing, because Bill knew that Gerard was named the successor. Gerard knew he was named the successor. Mm-hmm. So it's just like this awkward, like, how long is Bill going to hang on for until it's Gerard's team? And I think that did create a weird dynamic. And then, you know, Tamara, you brought up earlier the weird dynamic in the quarterback room. Mm-hmm. So now you have a weird dynamic between probably your two most important coaches, and then you have a weird dynamic between your quarterbacks. And when you look back on it, no wonder why they won four games.
Like, you know, Gerard's, like, looking after, like, the Saints loss, being like, ooh, I might be getting the call up a little sooner.
Yeah.
You know, like, as the season went on, he must have – and how much of the coaching staff knew that, probably?
People talk.
Yeah.
So I'm sure
I would say I wouldn't be surprised if even the players knew that. Yeah. Like,
just waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
So, like, just to take that a step further, don't know exactly who and which ones, but I have to think there is certainly a group that's pretty tight with Gerard that knew that Gerard had it in his contract and were Team Gerard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there were probably some of the other guys.
Donovan
that were like,
McNabb and T.O. all over.
Right.
Again.
You know, like,
yeah.
Some of the other guys are like, really, Bill? Like, he has that in his contract? Are you kidding me? Like,
in
their team, Bill. So now there's a division among the coaching staff. There's a division among the players.
Yeah,
it wasn't a good
setup.
Yeah,
and you also the other thing that Reese had in there too was similar to what the Herald had reported. Was that last week or whatever? That Bill thought that the Patricia offense was making strides, and Bill was not totally against Bill O'Brien coming in, but he didn't necessarily think it was necessary to make a change. And so you have Gerard getting it written into his contract that he's the heir apparent. You have the Crafts telling him that you need to hire Bill O'Brien and not keep Matt Patricia. And from Bill's side of things, you can start to see why he was probably a little bit unhappy being here, because he was getting overruled by ownership on football decisions. And so I see both sides of it now, that, you know, both those things were probably dysfunctional.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a head scratcher though for you to really look at that Patricia offense and say, oh, we're making progress. Huh?
I found myself wanting to go back and look. And
I mean,
see
not
if they
saying
really were.
Not saying that it was, you know, better, because Paul brought it up multiple times. Like, if you look at the numbers from both years, like,
It was better.
Yeah, I know.
But
it was better 2 years ago than it was this year, numbers wise. Right? Yeah. You're just using the data.
Yeah.
I will say that the first half against Buffalo in the finale last year was their best half of offensive football the entire season.
Yeah, and I would say those two things. Number one, if you just go by the sheer numbers, it was better. And number two, I thought it got better as the year went on.
Yeah.
When they finally started. Stop the chuck and duck and stop turning it over, it got better. It never got better this year.
Yeah.
The best it probably was the first game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that week 18 game against Buffalo, we can go back revisionist history and say if they don't return two kickoffs, like, who knows? But they
moved the ball in that
they
game.
Had a great first half offensively in that game. One of the better halves.
They
of,
did move the ball in that
and
game.
And they had a good night on Thanksgiving in Minnesota, you know, in those games. And so I'm not going back and saying Patricia is
bring it back.
Yeah, but
he might be
I can understand from Bill's perspective why this all went south for him, because I think we talk a lot about it, you know, as employees of the team and things, you know, the team, we're still here, Bill's not, so we have to talk about the future. But looking back on it with Bill, like, I can see why he was probably ready to maybe let go well.
One last thing, Mike, before you hit that is in relation to that, like, we mocked and ridiculed the idea of trying to make some changes to the scheme when Patricia did it. And I'm guilty of it just as much as anybody else. I'm not excluding myself from this. This year, it was like, you know, they really got to get past this offense because the time has passed. And I'm guilty of it. I'm telling you, I these are cliches that I've used this year. So I do think that part of it was Bill O'Brien's doing it, and he's a real offensive coordinator, so everything is okay. And when Patricia was doing it, there's no way this can work. And I agree, and I don't think it worked. I'm not trying to give you a revisionist history that it really was better than you think. It wasn't. It was terrible. Yeah. But it was just as terrible this year, if not more so, and now we think it's because of the offense, where they were kind of trying to make some changes to the offense last year, not because of Patricia. I think it was more of an organizational decision to try to change things.
Faster,
and people were mocking them.
Yeah, well,
you know, like these guys. The problem was those guys didn't know how to implement the changes.
Right,
that was the problem.
But in theory, it was good, right? In theory,
was not wrong.
And then you wonder, with Bill O'Brien coming back, did they just have to kind of blow that up and just let Bill O'Brien do what he does? And do they have to, you know, scrap changes that maybe Bill actually wanted to employ?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you look at the Patricia offense and you trust the players, right? Like the guys that are actually trying to go out there and make these plays. And the players with the Patricia offense just continuously told us that they had no answers. Like there was no, you know, the why thing, right? They had no, they would ask questions as to, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Or, you know, what do I do if this happens? You know, if they blitz on this type of play, like what am I supposed to do? And they felt like the coaches didn't have confident, legitimate answers for them. And I don't think that was what the problem was this year. The problem this year, I think, were personnel and execution based versus last year. I think a lot of people felt like they didn't know what they were doing. And I think that that's a big difference. But maybe their players were a little bit better than we gave them credit for in 2022.
Well, let's jump back to the phones. We got John down in Louisiana. Hey, John.
Hey, can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah, hear you good?
I was wondering, being that Mayo was picked before the general manager, does he kind of have the lead direction on what the team is going to do, like via free agency and trade? And Deuce, I hope that Cole gets by you really soon.
Oh my god.
Oh man, you
well done.
That call of the day right there, John.
Well,
you just
done.
Locked it up. Thanks for calling in. No, it's a good question. I mean, that's
it.
You
is
know,
a good question. I don't have a definitive answer. I don't think so.
Is it usually the GM, right? Like the GM technically?
Well, I just feel like that they're setting this up so it's different, and it's going to be more of a collaborative process, and I'm not sure that I like it, but I think that's where they're headed.
Yeah. I would like to hope that it's more of a traditional process, right, where you have a general manager, you have a hierarchy. Like it's not just one guy running the whole show, and Bill earned it. Like Robert said yesterday, Bill had to earn that responsibility once, you know, they won the 3 Super Bowls and things like that. But now it will be interesting to see who has control of the 53-man roster. Like, the 90-man roster is one thing. You know, GM comes in, he makes a bunch of signings, whatever. But the 53-man roster is what it's really about.
That needs to be the coach.
I agree.
The 53 needs to be the
because
coach. You get players, you got to let the guy coach
the players.
Right, because
if the GM, you know, has control of the 90 and he signs T. Higgins, Jerod Mayo's not cutting T. Higgins, right? Like, that's not – but Jerod Mayo's going to know better than the general manager who the 52nd guy is versus the 54th guy because he's the one that's out there coaching these guys. So, I agree with that.
Let's jump back. CJ and KC. CJ, I hope you're staying warm out there. How's it going?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Hey, you kind of stole my idea. I was going to – I read the Mike Reese piece, and I wanted to chat with you guys about that. But I'll just go back to something that I saw yesterday. It's a pretty interesting history of the past 3 coaches of the Patriots. Belichick, it's Pete Carroll, and it's Bill Parcells. And one of them's already in the Hall, and the other two are going there. Do you think that that's that legacy that Jerod's following, do you think that's on – any of his mind with the expectations that the rest of us have as fans, seeing the last, you know, going back past Belichick now, 30 years of potential success. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah. Thanks, CJ. Appreciate it.
I think that it's
hard enough following Bill Belichick,
tough.
You know, like I think
it's
that's
about
it.
Belichick.
Following Bill.
You got to just be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like the question Matt got all the time, like, oh, following Tom Brady, not so much following Cam because he was just there. But I think when you focus too much on that and trying to beat someone's legacy or be in someone's shoes, I think you get yourself in trouble. So I'm kind of hoping he just is himself and doesn't change who he is to try to be, you know, the next Bill Belichick, you know?
Yeah. The coaching tree, when you think about all the failures of the coaching tree, McDaniels, Judge, Patricia, I think a lot of the things you hear about those guys and their other stops was that they were these disciplinarian, hard-nosed head coaches, and people were kind of like, you think you're Bill Belichick, but you're not Bill Belichick. And I think Jerod Mayo, at least so far, has not been that way. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it stays that way, but that doesn't, you know, kind of Paul, like you said earlier, that doesn't mean that there isn't Bill instilled in Jerod Mayo. It just kind of comes out in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're hoping.
Yeah. Be nice.
Cool to be nice.
Jody down in Atlanta. Hey, Jody. You might be getting Bill Belichick.
Hey,
what do you think about
guys?
That? You want Bill Belichick down there in Atlanta?
Oh, man, I was just about to talk about that. That's first thing I was going to say is, Deuce, what's wrong, man?
That's cool.
Sounds like you hit one too many. Okay, here we go.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm all right. Power
but, through. Yeah, they want Bill Belichick down here in Atlanta. I think it's so funny, like, over the last year since, you know, we beat them 28-3 game.
Jody.
Uh-oh.
As soon as he said 28-3, it went out.
The whole organization. And just hearing them now clamoring for him. And it'd be so ironic if he's the person that takes them back to the or not back to the Super Bowl, to the Super Bowl and finally get them over the hump after they've completely bashed him for the last few years.
That's good. I guess we'll have to wait and see. It does seem like one of the favorites. Thanks, Jody. Appreciate it. That's a little bit of speculation. What do you got, Evan?
We have a Seth Wickersham autopsy of the Patriots.
Oh.
It was the Patriots way until it wasn't.
So good.
And then apparently this is just one quote in intern Mike Cadlick is
he's
quoting
the
this.
Good ones.
So I hope he doesn't leave me astray here. But this was a quote from the piece. Bill had told me that Brady couldn't play anymore, Kraft said privately afterward. And then he goes out and wins the effing Super Bowl. So that was where the piece starts, is Brady's exit, and then it goes from there.
All right, so that just dropped on ESPN, I'm guessing, with a new Seth Wickersham behind the scenes. Now, he wrote what did he write there? That he had the with Don Natta.
Oh,
and Natta, yeah, the behind the scenes. So I'm sure he's got plenty of stuff.
That's brutal.
The preeminent Patriots autopsy reporter.
Well, we can all look forward to reading some of that. Let's try to get to some of these emails here before we wrap up this emergency. We've been going 46 minutes. It seems these things go pretty easy. Any chance the Crafts make a phone call to Saban to be the president of football operations? That's from Courtney. Anybody see Saban?
I heard that he's getting an admin role at T-Town.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Claire writes in, hello, everyone. Hi, Maureen. Hello, Emergency Pod. Fitzy really sold me on reasons for Vrabel as head coach, so the Mayo news mildly bummed me out, but I will come around, I'm sure. Of course, that's Claire. My question is, do you feel any better or worse about that number 3 draft pick, as in who they may take now that you know it's at least Mayo at the top?
I was thinking about that. I was like, do you think about, like, the top quarterbacks in your choice of offensive coordinator, like trying to find someone who fits their style?
Like, it's like Gerard's a defensive guy, and you feel like he's going to want defense. But you're like, dude, you can't. Mm-hmm. You got to take an offensive guy, right?
Yeah, I do like the idea, though, that the quarterback is now going to be given to somebody that played and is younger and can relate to him, especially nowadays. Like, you're talking about a 71-year-old Bill Belichick coaching a 21-year-old Jaden Daniels. Like, it just a big, big age gap there. And I just feel like Gerard will be able to, whether it's Jaden Daniels, Drake May, whoever, could have a better relationship with that player and be able to relate. Because whether it was whoever you want to blame for the Mac Jones relationship with Bill Belichick, that relationship did not go well. And I think a lot of it was about just age and the difference in the, you know, Mac wanted to know why, and Bill told him to shut up and play, you know, like, and that was sort of the way that situation unfolded, and why it kind of decayed was because, you know, I don't think Bill Belichick liked Mac Jones very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just as a kid, as a person, you know, and I can understand it. Like, it's somebody that I'm not quite as young as Mac, but I can understand why somebody from Bill's guard would be like, what the hell does this kid is just a, he's, you know, spoiled. Like, I'd say it that way is the best way to say it.
Yeah,
I think.
Like this one from Katina in Houston, just said, one of my concerns based on what we've observed during Bill's tenure is the importance of relationships between coaches in New England. This has proved to be both positive and negative. Ernie and Judge, since Mayo has only been here, does he have enough connections, relationships with people outside the organization that can bring new perspectives to fill out the coaching staff? Is my concern relevant?
Just yeah.
Love
I
you
think,
guys.
And I Tamara. Think it is.
Hmm?
Yeah, she said she loves you guys and Tamara. So, thank you for all you do.
A lot of personal shout-outs to Tamara today.
Yeah, have you noticed? but I do think that's a legit concern, because I don't know how many relationships Mayo has been able to develop in his short time in the league. You know, in terms of that kind of relationship. I'm not talking about player. You know, I'm sure he has a million friends that he played with and whatnot. But in terms of coaches, administrators, GMs, yeah. you know, decision makers, advisors, things that he can lean on, whereas Bill had a lot of that over his time. You know,
yeah.
when you think back to the, you know, the Piolis, the Dimitrovs, the Ernie Adams, and those kinds of people, he had a lot of people in his corner.
Yeah, and that's why I'm going to keep banging the table to bring in another person of that
fresh
ilk.
Offensive staff.
Because I just feel like that Gerard Mayo is going to need some help. Like, he's in terms of like the CEO elements of being the head coach, I think he's going to need some guidance and he's going to need some help. And I think it would be great to have somebody on staff, whether it's the offensive coordinator, whether it's somebody upstairs that has that kind of you know, history. The one guy that I would say, you know, we all, I think, hope that DeMarcus Covington stays and maybe he's the defensive coordinator for Gerard. But Patrick Graham is another name that I would throw out there as potentially coming to join the staff. He's with the Raiders right now, but he was on McDaniel's staff with the Raiders. So right. when they clean house, it will probably, if they don't, you know, keep Antonio Pierce, he's probably going to end up being a free agent. Carm Brasillo already jumped ship to the Giants with Dable. So that's already.
I wonder if Graham would go back to the Giants. I know
possible.
He was there.
It's possible, already. But the chair's already moving in terms of that Raiders staff. And maybe Patrick Graham, who played, was the coach, Gerard Mayo's coach. He was the linebacker's coach when Gerard Mayo was playing with the Patriots. They definitely have a relationship.
I like the question because I do wonder if he has some sort of mentor that helped him through his interview processes, you know, like the past couple of years when he's gone into the interviews. Like, I know he probably, you know, picked Bill Belichick's brain, but I do wonder if he's reached out and found his own network to talk to of guys who have been in his shoes before that are a little bit younger.
Got a good one here from Chudders. He calls us Deuce, Dude, Dudette, and Dad.
Dad.
You can be my dad.
You're not dad. You're not
Chudders.
You're not dad.
After I told you how good your email was yesterday. Thanks.
Fred is dad. You're like older brother.
Even though Fred's like 3 years older than me.
you're like older brother.
I like this, though, from Chudders. When do you think Bill truly knew what his future was going to be? Because he must have had insight into the contract position with Mayo. Like, do you think that – I mean, did he just try to tough it out this year? But it's hard to see him operating.
No, I think
like
he
this.
Thought they were going to win. I don't think he ever does anything thinking it's going to be a disaster. I think he felt like they could put it together and win. It didn't work.
Yeah. But did he feel like his hands were starting to be more and more tied to do it the way he wants to
but
do
I
it?
Figured – this is just my take. I feel like he felt, you want to stack the deck against me? Okay, I'm going to go 11-6 and go to the playoffs. Then what are you going to do? Yeah. That's how I think he went into the season.
Yeah,
I do wonder when he looked at this roster if he really thought he could win with these guys.
I think so. I think he.
I'm pretty sure that based on some of the conversations I've had, that's what he felt.
I think Paul is right that he always thinks that he'll, if he has to put that lipstick on the pig,
I can coach around it.
Yeah, I do wonder if this was a little bit discussed between all the parties and with Bill. He's, what, 15 shy of Shula right now, right?
Well, passing him. I think it's 14, and then 15 would be the
record,
right?
So if he won 4 games this year, let's say they win 8 or 9 games this year, I guess you could make an argument that in 2 years he could have done it, right? Like if they had waited to do the succession plan until after 2024, which is what I think the plan was. I mean, they would have had to been really good for 2 years to do it. But if he wins 10 games in 10 games and all of a sudden he passes Shula in 2024 and then he passed the torch, like maybe that was what was discussed as the succession plan.
All right, let's grab a couple last calls here as we bring this thing home.
Last call.
Hour over the top. Let's go down to Jackson in Alabama. Hey, Jackson.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Good. What's up?
Good. I got just 2 points real quick. One, I love the thought of Mike Vrabel being like a president of football operations, just having him in that seat. That would make me feel very comfortable about Gerard Mayo being there and just kind of like somebody to look over the top of him. And the other one is an honest question to Evan. If he's ever really, I mean, I know we joke about it a lot, if he's ever really thought about coaching or has gotten into, I don't know, like, I think a lot of us see Evan as someone that could actually do it. You know what I mean? But
that is very flattering. And way too kind.
Some of us don't look at it that way. But that's okay.
Paul's right on this one, actually. No, not really. Because I do not think I'm not that much of an egomaniac to think that I could actually do it.
Why don't we put this to the test? Because I think I'll be coaching flag football this year. Why don't we have Evan put the playbook together for my flag team?
So, the annexation of Puerto Rico.
No,
be like, Evan, I need four plays.
I'll just run mesh the entire time.
Evan gives me vibes. Evan gives me vibes of when Jabril Peppers was asked about flag football when he's like, flag football? No, I'm too violent for that. I like when people hate each other.
Just to play the game because the caller brought it up. I can't coach. All right, like I know that. No way. But personnel has always like I've always loved that. Like the draft is like my favorite time of year. So, interesting.
I would have thought the other way.
If I had to go into one direction, whether it would be in the personnel department scouting for the draft or whatever, or like advanced scouting of opponents, you know, like watching, you know, the upcoming opponents film and breaking that down, that would be more my thing. But like hands-on, like going out to practice every day and like coaching players hands on. No, like I look more out of place than Dante Scarnecchia did. Sorry. Like I can't do that. No,
sorry to the Lazarmi on that one. All right, last call of the day. This is gonna be Jesse in Washington. Hey, Jesse.
Hey guys, quick question here. What have they done to address the biggest problem that exists for the New England Patriots, which is their offensive team? Offensive personnel. I feel like Jerod Mayo is the answer to a question that no one was asking, which is, do we need a leader? Do we need someone who can remake the defensive side of the football? He doesn't actually address what is the root cause of the Patriots' failures over the last several years. So I guess, why have we not taken more aggressive steps to address the offense and the personnel on the side of the offense?
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Good question, Jesse. Thanks.
Yeah, that,
can we wait to see who's going to be running the offense?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's to me when we get to go to Jerod's presser on Wednesday at noon. I think we said that already, but yeah. That's when the introductory press conference is. That's the number one question in the room: is what's the plan on offense? Right. Like, we all love you, Jerod, and like, congratulations,
like
happy for you.
Great.
Defense going to stay the same.
I like how we role played right there because you know every single one of these guys. Congratulations, Jerod.
Yeah, I mean, like, I work for the team, so me saying it is like I already have a little bias in me, as you can probably tell. Like these
congratulations, really happy.
These other people, like, never mind. the point is, the number one question in the room has got to be, all right, like, we know you can coach defense. We know that side of the ball is pretty set personnel wise too. What's the plan on offense? What's your view? What's your philosophy on offense? Because I went back and listened to some of his responses during the season, and a couple of them were okay, and a couple of them were not so exciting. Like he did.
I mean, you can't just say we want to score points.
He said,
"Move the ball, score points."
At one point that he's would be happy to win every game 3-0, and I threw up a little bit in my mouth. So, like,
why not be happy to win 30-0?
Right. So that's the number one question.
30-29. Why not?
Well, I mean, I'm not telling you want to sacrifice your defense. Yeah. You don't have to sacrifice defense, but let's score a lot.
Yeah,
and not give up any.
Oh,
isn't that fine?
It's fine.
So
with me.
Okay.
So we're trying to see Big 12 football where there's just
there you go.
30-0
basketball scores.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this emergency podcast. Of course, we got a long weekend coming up, and then we'll have Jerod Mayo officially introduced next week. Maybe we'll get some answers as far as GM.
I guess this will have a show on Wednesday as well.
Yeah.
You know, with the 12 o'clock press conference.
Yeah.
Maybe a setup similar to what we did on Thursday. Maybe Mike and I will be with Fred, and maybe Tamara and Evan will be in the press conference. To make sure that you congratulate Jerod on his
ascension.
I'm so
proud of you. I'm so proud of you, Jerod. You were my first choice.
I would like to congratulate you, Jerod. Thank you.
Paul is breaking news on the pod here.
Well,
emergency show. Wednesday.
I think that's what we should do on Wednesday.
We'll do it.
I'll bring it up to Fred, and maybe he'll get back to me.
I don't know. I doubt it.
Persona
non grata. Want to thank everybody for tuning in. Love all the attention for the emergency pods. You guys are clamoring for one, so we're happy to give you one. And who knows? Hopefully this might not be the last one of the offseason. Otherwise, we'll see you Tuesday. Usual time, 12-2.
Mayo era.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check Patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.